Welcome to Genuine Life Recovery. We're here to help you and your loved ones overcome addictions and other addiction-related mental health challenges. In this show, we dive into the physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual aspects of addiction, mental health, recovery, family dynamics, codependency, and more. You can listen on your favorite app or at jodystevens.org. Genuine Life Recovery is made possible by great friends like Joshua's Heart, in memory of Joshua Brent Moore, bringing hope, love, and awareness to those afflicted by addiction, online at joshasheart.org, and Jody Stevens Productions for commercial voiceover, narration, production, MC, and public speaking, online at jodystevens.org. Hey friends, welcome back to Genuine Life Recovery. Today we're going to be talking about the link between addiction and trauma. We're going to talk about some treatment approaches. We're going to talk about the difference in approaches in Christian versus non-Christian counseling, similarities, addressing stigma around addiction and mental health, not just in the church, right, but everywhere. And I am joined by Myra Richards. Myra's a licensed professional counselor. She's founder of Remain Connected Counseling, Christian-based counseling practice in the Georgia area. She's worked with hundreds of couples over the years. She's a coach for Chick-fil-A Next conferences. I'd love to hear more about that. And does stuff for the Focus on the Family, Marriage Intensive, Hope Restored. So lots of stuff, Myra. I'm sure I'm just scratching the surface. Yeah. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's a joy.
Yeah. So you're in the, so as I speak right now, it's February 28th. We're waiting for a massive storm to roll in and hit the Sierra Nevadas. I'm in the Reno area. Are you getting that kind of weather? You're in Georgia, right?
Yes. And no, we're actually pretty warm today. I think it's like 70 something.
Wow.
So we're lucky. I love Georgia. I really, truly, the weather, it's amazing here. People complain about it being too hot, but I'm like, no, I've been through worse. So this is incredible.
So what led you into the into the counseling profession?
You know, when I was in college, I dated a guy who has alcoholism. Mm-hmm. For 4 years. And he also went to jail for about 2.5 years of our relationship together.
Wow.
And so I think that kind of started. I remember one of my friends in our dorm, she looked at me and she goes, you know, that's not normal, right? Mm. And I was like, what's not normal? To be able to handle someone going A, through an addiction, B, that he's in jail.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, okay. And she said, you should be a counselor. And it kind of stayed with me. Then I had a lot of different roommates or college friends who went through depression and anxiety and whatnot. Then I did ministry for a little bit. I think that when I did ministry, they kind of solidified it that I just loved processing with people. I mentored 8 girls a week, and I just loved how I would go, and I loved being able to talk about God and healing and all that stuff.
Wow.
And God made a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, God made a way. And 8 years into doing this, I still love it. So
that's cool. Well, I'm glad you figured it out with the guy and then moved from being codependent and trying to fix his addiction to actually helping people.
Yeah. Have
in
you
a
read Codependent?
You know what I mean?
Have you read Codependent No More?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The best one, I think, is called Lost in the Shuffle by Robert Subby. I bring it up every show. You have to read that. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Okay, I'd probably love it. Yeah. I read Codependent No More in college, and I was like, huh. Yeah. I think I am this. So, yeah.
I think we all are to some degree. I think with codependency, mm-hmm. it can get to such an extreme when you don't treat that, like my mom, she's lost, her dad was an alcoholic. My brother died of alcoholism, and she never got help for herself. And then there was underlying trauma and all that stuff. And as you get older and older, it can destroy you. It's not like this fun little thing where we help people. It's actually super destructive. You know what I mean? When you see people in the latent stages of codependency, they're barely alive. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, I remember, I was in college, right? I was 18, 19 years old, and I would drive. If he would call me, I would drive it all the way back so I could make sure that he was safe.
Oh, gosh.
Middle of the night,
yeah.
Early morning. Like, it was pretty bad.
Wow.
All my thoughts were about him because, is he okay? You know, like, is he going to drink? It was just, I'm thankful to be where I am.
Yeah.
Today.
Everything you were doing was controlled by this individual. Yeah. In your thoughts and your,
yeah,
your actions. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Mm-hmm. That's that whole like external locus of control thing they talk about, where we're defined by these people, yeah, around us, which can be super destructive, which is why I think that figuring out who we are, you know, is so important, right? Because once you, absolutely, understood who you are and what you wanted to do, there wasn't room for that type of behavior and that type of codependency in your life anymore, right?
Yeah, when I realized, like, hey, we have God, he's the savior, and I'm not,
right?
I think everything changed, of like, because I did have savior complex. I think that, you know, I wanted to be the one that got him out of the addiction. I wanted, and that was also out of my worth, right? Like, if I could do this, then that means I'm worth it. But once my relationship with God increased, I think I could see, like, no, I'm worth it because God says that I am.
Mm.
And I'm not having to prove anybody that I'm anything.
Mm.
So that changed things for me.
Yeah. And then we're able to surrender it then. Because he's like, you know, mm-hmm, the reminder of, yeah, I'm God, yeah, you're not, and you aren't going to be able to change someone else. We can change us, right?
Right.
That's what I found, is sometimes, yeah, when we change us, that's when the other person changes.
Yep.
Right. So you walk away from this guy and then he might just get sober. Then again, he might not, but he might. He might change and become family, right, man, because you're like, yeah, no, we're not going to do this. You know what I mean? So, but we can't change them. But yeah, a lot of times if we tweak our behavior, like, that's sort of the little secret. Well, if you really want to change somebody, change yourself and then see, right?
It's true. It is true. I do a lot of marital counseling as well, and they'll fight up with each other. And I'm like, no, if you could just separate yourself and focus on yourself, then that marriage changes.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's great advice. Talk to me about your faith journey. I hear it coming out of your pores, and I love that. Praise the Lord. So you were kind of a reformed, you were Catholic before, which I imagine in Peru, that's probably the religion there, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was cradle Catholic, like they say, and...
Oh.
I loved it. I still love a lot of their traditions.
Oh, totally. Totally.
There's something about something being still in this world for so long, mm-hmm, that it's sweet. And high school, I went on my first mission trip with the Baptist church, mm-hmm, just because I wanted to make friends.
Yeah.
And so then they, like, my calculus teacher took me in and she was like, okay, well, I'm doing a Bible study. And I joined. I had no idea what a Bible study was. And then in college, I did ministry because I liked a guy. And I think that's finally when I started interning at the UGA Wesley. It was different. I don't know how to explain it. It was more like people's hearts were given to the Lord to experience some type of transformation, which I know that can happen in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I just had not experienced that yet there. I was more of like, do good all the time,
yeah,
you know, and just follow the rules all the time, because I was scared that if I didn't, God wouldn't love me. And at the ministry that I was at, it was different. It was like, he will love you no matter what, and he has more for you and more healing for you.
Yeah, it's definitely more in the Christian versus Catholic, you know. And of course, it's not to say that Catholics aren't saved or anything like that. I don't think either of us totally believe that. And I love a lot of the traditions too. I've often wanted to just go to a Catholic church just cause, you know. But yeah, in biblical, like in Christianity, like you said, there's the Bible study. There's more of the personal relationship. You're not confessing to a priest. Like there's less, it's just, you know, they call Catholicism like high religion, right? So there's the higher religions where they have, you know, all the all the traditions and all the stuff like that, and then there's us Christians, I guess, like the lower religion where we're just like, hey God, Dada, Daddy, you know, Abba, Father, stuff like that. So, like, did you feel there was just more of a personal relationship there?
Yeah, and I love having the background of both because you do have to have like an adoration for God because he is holy, right? And so I love that I grew up knowing that. Mm-hmm. And now I love that I also am into, like, I have a deep relationship with who Jesus is because he's not up top all the time. He does come down and meet us where we're at, if that makes any sense.
No, that's perfect. And I think that describes it well, because you're like, you're right. Because sometimes I think in a lot of other Christian religions, we emphasize the personal relationship, but we're not giving God the glory and the respect and the awe. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like, and I get into this too, where it's like, I don't feel like praying. I don't feel like doing it. I don't really want to get on my knees. Sure. That hurts. You know what I mean? Like, we just want to be comfortable. And so there's gotta be, you know, it's the meshing of the two. I think the personal relationship, but also just the reminder that God is omniscient and amazing and all powerful and everywhere and, you know, all those sorts of things. So, well, that's a cool story. So, have you worked with many clients struggling with addictions?
Recently, more than before. Mm-hmm. I intern at MAR. It's in Atlanta. It's an addictions facility. That was where my internship was for grad school. So I learned a whole lot. They were really good about education, the education part of addictions. And, you know, if you are first of all, you cannot be an active addiction to see me, and you have to go to at least for 90 days, you have to be going to meetings pretty frequently. Because it's not going to work just for you to see a counselor, or at least I don't think so, especially after interning at MAR. It just takes a lot before you can get to that step of like, okay, now I only have once a week accountability, you know, which is pretty much what a rehab facility provides for you, that security and that accountability to show up every day and be able to say I'm sober.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the early stages, it's almost like, let's stabilize the client, you know, and if you start digging into, you know, the psychological stuff, it can be very triggering and probably almost, I would think, unhelpful initially, right? It's like the first month or so, it's just like, can you get some sober time, right?
Right. Yeah, because I cannot talk about trauma or any trauma you've experienced before you're stable. Mm-hmm. And with addictions, that takes a little bit longer for them to get stable.
Any, like, big...
To an extent.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, it's totally true. And I think it really depends on where they're at, you know. So I think that's why doing a good assessment is important, right? You know, initially when someone comes in, because you got to figure out where they're at and what type of treatment is going to work best for them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But yes, after COVID, I think it showed people what their coping mechanism was a lot more than I had seen before. And so, you know, a lot more people come in and they're like, well, I don't think I have an addiction, but this is what I'm doing, right? I'm drinking like 6 to 8 beers a day. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, let's process that out and see like what's going on that's leading you to that. Because I do think that that is part of the symptom. At least that's my belief, that it's a disease and it's part of the symptom. And what is the heart problem?
Right.
Like, can we get to that core? Mm-hmm. Like, what is going on in your heart that is leading you to numb in whatever substance you're using?
I think we all do stuff for a reason. Yeah, that's totally true. And so it's figuring out, like you said, what's the reason for the addiction, right? Is it trauma? Is it genetics? Is it, you know, like in my family, it was the perfect storm. You know, we had everything. But for other individuals, it's just different. That's why, like, having that initial assessment, I think, is big, because then you can kind of figure out where to start, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, listening to different people talk about it in the rehab center, it was really interesting, because for some people it became very habitual to the point that they had an addiction. And for other, I still remember this client we had, she was like, that first sip and I loved it, you know? Yeah. And I was like, and people try to just pinpoint and make it like, no, it's this, no, it's this. And I'm like, well, it's probably all, whether it's trauma or genetics or just the habit of drinking, that is just all of it.
Yeah, no, and I like that you said that, because I think, especially in the scientific community, they want to find a cure. You know, they want to fix it. And if you look at the world and where we're going from a biblical perspective, you and I know there's no fixing it, you know. It's, you know, the Bible talks about the world, the flesh, the devil. So, you know, you could do a medical assessment where you're looking, right, you're looking at trauma. Is it trauma? Or you're homeless. Oh my gosh, we need to stabilize you and get you in a place, right? Or are you schizophrenic or something, right? That could contribute to the addiction. But then you could look at, is there a spiritual thing going on, right? Is there a demonic thing? Like, that's not something that you would look at in regular counseling, but from a biblical perspective, I think we see all those elements, because we're born into a sinful world. So everything is messed up, our neurons, our brains, like, so it is all of it. But I think in your world, a lot of people have trouble with 5 or 6 or 7 things being true at the same time, right?
Yeah. Well, for people in general, they like it to be one or the other, and not, we don't love the gray. I don't know that anybody loves the gray areas this much.
Yeah. Yeah. So what have you discovered anything in particular that stands out to you in working with clients with addictions?
Yeah, I would have to say there are a couple things, and I actually jot them down because I was like, I'm going to forget. And one of them is their sensitivity to emotions is very high. And I've noticed that with a lot of them, if they come in and they try to portray like this, I'm strong, and strong means I don't do emotions, when they are really more nurturing, and if they could allow themselves to know how to process those emotions, they could fully be themselves. So just, they're more sensitive. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I know that some people can take that, but I just mean that if like they're more emotionally in tune, and my job is to teach them how to tune into those feelings that they have.
Mm, I love that. That actually really describes so many things, because often with addiction, if there is trauma, right, you're taught to ignore your emotions because you're pretty much told they're wrong, right? If there's trauma or you're abused or something like that, everything about you is invalidated. So you're like, well, nobody can help me. right? I mean, my own parents didn't right. help me. So obviously I have to be strong and I have to do all this myself and I have to stuff everything because I was told my emotions were wrong, right? I mean, you probably get that a lot. I mean, yeah. a lot of people, like I remember even my parents, it was like, don't feel that way. You know, stop feeling that way. Your dad right. and I don't know why you feel that. So yeah. you just stop feeling. So it doesn't mean you're not sensitive. You're just faking it. Now you start drinking right. and you know, trying to numb those feelings that you don't think you're supposed to have, right?
Yeah. Which can actually be very beautiful once you have them. Mm. They can bring more color. You know, I feel like, yeah. at least for me, it just emotions, they're a warning sign. They tell you what's wrong. They tell you what's right. You know, they tell you how you're doing. And like they say, like if you can experience pain, that you can experience in a tremendous amount of joy. And I've not through addictions, but I've gone through traumas and several hard things in life to know that that is true. That is very true.
It's like that
because I allow my heart to be free.
Yeah.
When it was in pain, I can allow my heart to be free when it's experiencing joy.
Mm. And there's a certain amount of authenticity in that. And I think that's one of the things that takes a while to get to that place when we're completely authentic, especially if we were told we weren't, you know, you can't do that or you can't be that, you know, so we're kind of faking it in life. We put on that mask and then yeah. we're not being authentic. And I think that's where that thing with feeling alone in a crowd comes from, with people struggling with just not just addiction, but other things. Like I always felt alone in a crowd or like people didn't yeah. like me. And I think a lot of it is, well, you didn't know who you were because you didn't, like you said, because that processing of those emotions are so much a part of who we are. And when mm-hmm. we pretend we're not there, they're not there. How do we really know who we are, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's like negating parts of you at all times. Then you're never going to fully know yourself. There's just no way if you're pressing down so many parts of you at the time.
Mm, yeah. Have you found in your practice a link between addiction and trauma?
For some reason, in my practice, I think a lot more with women. It comes up more mm-hmm. traumatic events that have, you know, linked to the addiction, which is kind of the same for males, but it's more of like this unresolved anger mm. or unresolved some emotional repressing, as opposed to for females, I've seen it more be some type of big T trauma, which we would consider like sexual abuse, you know, emotional abuse and things like that.
Mm.
But that's just what I see. I know that that's not all, you know.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And sometimes guys don't really want to talk about it. Or I think the anger maybe comes from just they're not really supposed to deal with the emotions. And I think, too, yeah. especially with men, they get afraid that it's going to be all this. And it's like, right, I mean, you don't have to, like, go into every deep, dark secret and cry. You know, yeah. like, it doesn't have to be
no,
that
dream. No, I'll actually tell them.
Like, it's just, we can chill. Yeah. It's not like, you don't have to, like, you know,
yes.
process every, because I think a lot of people don't want to go there. And that's right. like, I'm one of those, let's go there and figure it all out. But it doesn't have to be as, I think, dramatic as maybe they think therapy is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I tell my male clients, I'm like, especially if they come with their wives or, you know, or they have moms who have been like highly sensitive or whatever. I'm like, you're never going to be that. You're never going to look like that because you're different than them. You're wired different than them. You're not going to cry for a year. I could probably cry for a year, you know?
Yeah.
But that's not you. If we can just get you to feel it, I don't care what that looks like. I don't care how you express it. I mean, you know, in healthy ways, yeah. But it's feeling it. It's not about you expressing it through tears. It's more about just feeling it and allow yourself to be okay with that feeling.
Mm. Talk to me about just the process of getting people to that point do you start with identifying the emotions and then feeling them? Because a lot of times we're, you know how they say like anger is really fear and things like that. And so a lot of times we're feeling all this stuff. I know before I got sober, I was like the stuffed sock drawer with all this crazy stuff coming out. And I didn't know what I was feeling. I had anger and rage and road rage. And I mean, I didn't know what or why. It was like a big mess to sort out. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel depressed?
No, not much.
No. Okay. Because a lot of stuffed anger will actually be released through depression, through people feeling depressed. Mm-hmm. You know, people come in and they're like, I'm feeling depressed. And I'm like, then I have to evaluate their anger. Because if they're repressing their anger, they will feel depressed. Mm. It's really fascinating. I'm sorry. I just forgot your question because I went on that tangent.
Oh, no. It's okay. It's like, what are some of the strategies to get people to that point of just uncovering the emotions, identifying them, feeling them? What's that process like for you?
Yes. So you come in, you sit down, I kind of feel it out, thankfully, because we have the Holy Spirit, I can like feel it out where they're at to some extent. You can see it in their body language of like, I really don't want to be here, but I'm here. So show up, lady, you know? And then I have them take deep breaths. I kind of slow everything down for them when they come in. I'm like, we're going to slow your world down so you can actually start realizing what's going on within you. So I think if you come see me, you're probably going to close your eyes at least once in our sessions, because that's just how I get people to get in tune with their bodies. And so then I go through a body scan, which is pretty much from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. What is going on? You know, are you feeling tension? Are you feeling butterflies? Are you feeling like your feet are like lead, or, you know, so they can start realizing what's going on in their bodies. Mm-hmm. And through that, I ask, okay, what does that correlate to in your emotions? So if you're feeling a little bit of butterflies in your stomach, for you, does that correlate to anxiety? Or does that correlate to excitement? Like for me, if I start feeling like my feet are heavy, that's just correlating with depression. If I start feeling stress in my shoulders, that is usually for me that I'm feeling super anxious about something. But it's different for everyone. But I want them to correlate those two things. Because for people who don't have the language of emotions, if they can at least know what's going on in their body, then they can quickly start coming up with an emotion once I start teaching them more about, you know, the feelings wheel. And I think, I don't know if we hear feelingswheel.com, like you just pops up big old wheel with like hundreds of emotions, and people are like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I had that many. What I like about that wheel is that it goes from like anger, sadness, whatever, to like disappointment, fears, and stuff like that. So it makes it more specific as you go out. So you can start in the middle and just tell me anger, but then is it sadness? You know, is it disappointment? Is it that you're scared? It's just helpful.
I tried to read that Carol Izzard book, you know, that huge book. It's like this big on emotions. Oh my gosh, I couldn't get through it. But yeah, there's like nine key emotions. And then from there, it branches out into all the different variations of anger and fear and sadness and excitement, right? And then there's like, not resentment, but disgust, I think, is one of them. Isn't there like nine of them that are core that they've determined? It depends on where you look, right?
That's what they've determined, yes. But it does depend a lot on where you look.
Yeah.
It does. It really does. Who studied it? Who researched what? You know, I don't really know.
So then we do this. Then at what point are we looking at like processing all this stuff? Like, where is this coming from? Does that come later in counseling?
It comes a little later. First you have to be aware of like, what would you name your emotions? Because when you start processing past, I would say then you have the language to tell me what's going on, right? So a lot of the questions that I ask them is like, hey, when have you felt like that before? And usually it would take them time to like, oh, that happened to me in high school. I'm like, okay, well, can it be before that? Like, I actually felt like that when I was 6 years old. I was like, great. What happened when you were 6 years old that you felt like that? You know, and is it to a similar feeling that when you experience something in your present, are you feeling like that 6 year old kid?
Yeah.
Who was, you know, do you feel stupid because you feel like that 6 year old kid? Do you feel not good enough because somebody somewhere told you that?
And right,
it's pretty.
Yeah,
cool.
Right there is the key, because kind of what you're identifying is triggers, and right there is the key to recovery, because those triggers, like, because I was or am dyslexic, and when I was a kid, I always felt stupid, and so even now at 51 years old, things will be like I'll do something, and then I'll feel stupid, and then it takes me back to when I was 11. But when I was drinking and using, I was not in tune enough to understand any of that. I just knew that I would get drunk.
Sure.
Right. And I mean, I had to dig, you have to dig through all of that, because you can't tell someone they're being triggered because initially they don't even know what that is. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. And we all have triggers. Mm-hmm. You know, it just depends on the intensity of that, that can make someone spiral or someone not.
Yeah. And I think that's why, you know, you have to kind of move slowly through that. What are some like modalities or approaches or even just like homework or things like that that you give to people struggling with addiction or trauma or stuff like that? You know, things that you have found to be approaches that you have found to be the most helpful.
The approach with people who have addictions, I would say I'm more direct. Mm-hmm. It's a fine balance in between direct when they need to be direct, but then when they start feeling that I'm nurturing at the same time, mm-hmm. right? It's like, okay, how can we do this in a way that you still feel safe with me?
Yeah.
Because if I'm too direct about your emotions, then you're not going to feel safe. I'm just being like the rest of the people in your world. So I'm definitely more direct. With trauma, I use EMDR. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that? Which is just reprocessing traumatic events in a way that doesn't re-traumatize you. It's not supposed to re-traumatize you. It was used for veterans. I have found it. I had done it on myself before I started studying and doing it to other people, because that's just how I work. I'm like, if it works for me, then I love it. And I'm like, it's probably going to work for you. So that would be the big one for trauma.
For those that
know homework.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Actually, you know what? Let's get to the homework in a second, but just for people that don't know, what is EMDR? I've done it before. It didn't work for me, 'cause I didn't have, I had like fear of heights and I had all these different things, but I didn't have one specific event. It was just all a bunch of weird stuff. So there was hard to find anything to process. I think with EMDR, you almost have to have very specific events. Do you think?
You're supposed to process the emotions.
Oh, so maybe I had it done wrong.
Yes, or
I was trying to do it for events and I had all these gaps. I don't remember stuff. I'm like, I don't know. I don't remember. I just, my childhood's a vacuum. I don't remember anything.
Yes. Yeah. That's why you have trauma, because you can't remember anything. Your body's trying to like, you know, overcompensate in adulthood of like, how can I be protecting myself when you don't have to anymore? So EMDR is eye movement, desensitization, reprocessing. That's what it stands for. And the way that I use it is I reprocess the feelings or reprocess your negative cognitions, because that can lead me back to like I said, with the body scan, like that will lead, like if you can start processing, like I am not good enough, it will usually lead you back to the first time or the first couple of times that you started feeling not good enough. And then we can reprocess that event as opposed to reprocessing the actual traumatic event, because that could be re-traumatizing.
Mm, okay. So it's really just about reframing the emotion and kind of coming up with a different story, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way.
And then is that the thing, is that where it flips it into the other side of your brain? So now we're moving the event or the emotion into the right side of the brain, almost like dreaming. That's how I've heard it described. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so because it started with, I think she was walking and she was looking at stones when she was walking, and she would go from left to right. Mm-hmm. Right or left, you know, and she started thinking, oh, when I walk and I look at the stones, for some reason I can process things better. Yeah. And then she started using it with PTSD and whatnot. And so what it does is like, oh, you can reprocess that emotion with your right brain and with your left brain, which helps like the completion, mm-hmm. you know, of like logic plus emotion. If you can process, reprocess something with those two together, then you have a better idea of what you're actually going through, because when you go through trauma, it's all emotions. Yeah. You get stuck in your emotions. When you get stuck in your emotions for so long, that as an adult, you're like, "But I know that I'm not supposed to be feeling this way, mm-hmm. right?" And I'm like, "Okay, well, let's reprocess this traumatic emotion with some logic behind it to let your brain know that you are safe now."
Mm. I love that. How do we do? Can we do that to ourselves? Like, I know they have all these weird apps and stuff. Where, you know, I'm like sometimes, you know.
I haven't tried it to do it to myself. The ball in the sand, maybe.
Or something, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, they have, like, when I'm scrolling through TikTok, which I've been doing way too much, they have that. It's like this music that, like, and it's supposed to flip the, it's supposed to help you relax and deal with not trauma, but just anxiety and sleep, because I have really bad insomnia, and it's supposed to somehow stimulate both sides of the brain, this music. And I don't know if it's real or if it's just a gimmick, you know. Have you seen that?
Know. No, I'm actually not on TikTok.
Well, that's a good thing.
Well, I'm the person that watches TikToks through Instagram. You know, that's me.
Oh, okay.
So maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not any better, but I don't see the full categories of all the TikToks there are, I guess.
It's fine. I mean, I just started doing it, and it is addicting. I can see how people get lost in that. Because they just feed you what you look at. So for me, it's the babies and the puppies, and then you're just lost looking. But it is very therapeutic because they're so darn cute. And I always think it's funny, like how babies and puppies have to absolutely do nothing. I mean, they don't have to do anything, and we just love the dog. You know, it's kind of funny.
Well, when my mom passed away, I remember that was part of like my own therapy to myself. I would watch reels that were funny.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to laugh. So I told my husband, like, for 30 minutes, I'm just going to watch reels that I can laugh at. And it was crazy because I would just sit there and I was like laughing and laughing. He would just look at me like, okay, that's what you need. But I remember telling him, like, I just need to remember to laugh again.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Oh, that and skiing. Skiing is fun. I'm a big skier. So that, you know, watching people crash or do really crazy, you know, watching people do crazy things that we're like, yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. But
oh my God. But maybe.
Yeah. So talk to me about the differences or similarities in Christian versus non-Christian counseling. This is kind of a big deal because I think people, sometimes therapy can get a bad rap in the church. And, you know, you have to kind of understand, mm-hmm. like a regular counselor and a Christian counselor, we have the same training, right? There's a lot of similarities. It's just a different approach or a different worldview, right?
Yes. And that, yes, it is. That's why, like, even when people sign my informed consent, I want to be transparent. I want to be vulnerable. And I want to be like, hey, this is where my views are coming from. Because they say, like, as a therapist, you have to be unbiased. And I'm like, I don't know that I buy that.
I know.
You know? And so knowing that, knowing if you still want to come see me, and I do have clients who are agnostic or Jewish or whatever, but they know me and they know where I'm coming from. Right. I'm like, so if you ask me a question, you know where my values are coming from. I'm not hiding that from you, which I think creates a sense of safety. I think that the church before has seen Christian counseling as Bible beating.
Right.
Like, you come, you sit, I read you scripture, and then I tell you to do it. You know, I think that that's the way that people think about it. And I don't know what that is, but if that is not Christian counseling to me, and I hope that it's not Christian counseling for most people, it's more of like, hey, know that I'm a person of faith. Know that if we are reprocessing traumatic events in my mind, I'm going to be praying for you. I'll pray for you after, and sometimes in session, but usually not, just because I don't want them to depend on me for their spirituality, you know? So if I really feel like God is telling me, like, hey, you need to pray for this person right now, then I will, but very rarely. And so some people come in and they're like, well, you told me you were a Christian counselor, but you haven't done this and you haven't done that. And I'm like, that's actually more for your safety than it is because I don't want to do it or because I don't believe in the word or whatever, you know?
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, because some people who are super Christian, you go in and how come she's not reading scripture to me? And then other people don't want anything to do with it. It's all science. Like, when I got my MS in addiction counseling and was at a opiate treatment center, and it was wonderful, but it was really people were very science focused and looking at addiction and from the disease model. And I agree with that as well, but also the spiritual piece of it. And so, you know, again, you and I are, you know, we're trained on all of it. It's just that, like, if I'm dealing with someone with if you want me to incorporate, right, if they want you to, absolutely, that's fine. But I'm just coming from it as from the worldview that God is in control. He loves you. When you die, it's not the end, right? We have a savior. We're going to live. It's just a worldview, but the training is the same. And I think that's where people get so confused. Like, they think they're going to come in and we're going to hypnotize them or something like that. You know, and I'm sure there's things that we don't do that maybe, like, I probably wouldn't do hypnosis or things like that. I mean, maybe you would, but you know what I mean? Like, there's certain things that we might steer clear from, but for the most part, right, it's similar stuff with just a more of a biblical worldview, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're trained the same as long as you're a licensed professional counselor. You know, you get the same training. I went to Richmond, so I went to a private Christian to get my master's. So I got more like theology and trauma classes you know, spiritual classes. But we all have to have the same courses. In order for us to be licensed, we have to. That's just part of it.
Yeah. And what you do, you know, what Maya does is more mental health, right? There is pastoral counseling, and that's a little different. And that's going to be more biblical. Like, you're going to go to the scripture for everything. And I think there's room for both. You know, I think some people super zealoty are like, the Bible's enough. You don't need anything else. But, you know, even like Dr. Henry Cloud, he said, rarely does someone experience a lifelong trauma and they're just cured of it like that. A lot of times we just need more, because we just live in this broken world. Doesn't mean God can't just like do that and fix it. I just, for some reason, it seems like it doesn't work that way. You know?
It doesn't. And it especially doesn't, because I can only take you to a certain point, and then it's part of being a Christian, you will have doubts of where God was.
Yeah.
And I don't have the full knowledge of that. So you need to go and see a pastor to, you know, address that and like fight it out with them.
Yeah.
Because I'm not that person. Yeah. Nor do I want to be that person.
Finally, you know, having an addiction, having a mental health issue, being involved in extreme sin because you were abused, like these aren't moral failure issues, right? I mean, some of it is our sin nature, but it's not just because we're bad. And I think sometimes we can feel that in the church. And that's, I think, a little bit of a different approach that you as a counselor might take than maybe a certain Baptist church might be a little different. Like, kind of talk to me about that, sort of this idea of sin, addiction, mental health, moral failing, because the science would say addiction's not a moral failure, it's a brain disease. Maybe the extreme church might say it's a sin. I think we're looking at something more in the middle, you know?
Yes. So I think that if the moral failure comes in, it's probably more on the people who are not, who don't have an addiction. And we think that people can be fixed quickly, mm-hmm. or that is their choice.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I don't know many who or any as of today that decided, you know what, I'm going to wake up and I have chosen to have an addiction today. Like, you know, like, I'm like, okay, well, that's not, it's not their choice.
Yeah.
I get that once you start getting healing and recovery and sobriety, you know, it is your choice to stay sober, but it's not your choice to have that addiction. And I wish that more people knew that, and that is not just a quick fix, that it's not like, don't do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you could let people focus on who they are able to be and what they are able to do instead of focusing, it's like, just don't do it. I think we would have a higher success for sober people.
That's true. That's so true. Yeah. You know, and there are bad people that like don't have a conscience out there and stuff like that. They're not in therapy. Anybody that's trying to get help, right? They do. Yeah. They feel bad. They're worried about the sin nature. They don't understand why they're doing what they're doing. They want help and they want to understand why. And I think it's just learning new skills is so much of it too, don't you think? I mean, we just, especially if there's trauma, you're just taught from the time your brain is forming to handle things in maladaptive ways. And so right, part of your job too, I think, Maya, is just, what's a different way that we can deal with this besides getting drunk or cutting ourselves or whatever it is that we're doing that we maybe learned when we were 5, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, my oldest is 3.5 and she was 2. She was going through some anger things, and we would read her books, right? Of like, when you're angry, you run, you know, and then she would get angry and she would run around the house. Or like Sophie, when she's angry, she, I think we taught her to like scream at her pillow, like she can scream into your pillow, you know, but I'm like, but we know that now. And I know that now. I think when I was growing up, when you're angry, just stuff it down and suck it up, you know,
okay.
It's just different. It's just Oh, thanks for telling
right?
me.
So then you're 40 and all of a sudden you have to learn how to be angry. I mean, that's just, you know, I think none of our parents meant to do that, especially my generation, you know, that's how their parents were. And, you know, you had wars and the Great Depression and everybody had to stuff it to live, you know. Now we're.
Sure. They were surviving.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. Yeah. Well, Maya, it's been great to have you here. I so enjoyed our conversation and your insights. Talk to me just about the work you're doing and how people can get in touch with you.
So you can go to our website, which is remainconnectedllc.com, or you can find us on Instagram or Facebook at remainconnected.
Cool. And you're doing stuff for Chick-fil-A. What's that? I was looking at their website. It looks like they have a mentoring program or something. Kind of cool.
So I go every year. I go twice a year right now. Once for their big conference, it's called Next, for all their staff and operators. It is the most amazing thing. And I get to work there, like, which is such a blessing and such a gift of God that I get to do that. So I sit down with either staff people or operators back to back. There's eight of us, eight counselors. And they come in, it's a coaching session. So they come in and we give them resources as to, like, hey, here are some therapists that you can see afterwards. Or if they're struggling with their marriage, here are some resources of places that you can go. And then I do it again in September for the female operators. They have their own event in September. And so I get to sit down, same thing with female operators who are like high, achievers, high success women. And I love it. I love that I get to be like the most, one of the most nurturing, because they don't allow themselves to be as nurturing, because they're running a big business. Like, they don't have time. So we get to take care of them, and I love to pour into them like
And
that.
that's a program
It's been a
offered
joy.
through Chick-fil-A to help people just better themselves or deal with life. That
Yes.
is so cool. I love that.
I know.
I love that they're
We're
doing that.
hoping to do that.
I mean, I don't think McDonald's does
I
that.
love.
Maybe they do, right? I mean, that's what I love about
I don't
them, you know? That's really cool. Everything about that business is cool. I
know.
love the story of Truett Cathy and all that. It's just a neat story how you can do anything you want, you know, if you set your mind to it. So I love it.
Yeah, he had high integrity
Yeah.
and love for people.
Yeah.
And I think that when just the way that they get taken care of as a staff, as operators, they just really get taken care of. And you can feel it in the
Yeah.
room.
Yeah. It's great. I love eating there. They're also like attentive to you, you know, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, this is like a fast food place." And they're like clearing my table and asking me if I need anything, you know. It's pretty cool. So, what's your website again? Give me that one more time. Remain
RemainConnectedLLC.com.
connected. All right, Maya, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Charity.
Thank you so much, friends, for listening to Genuine Life Recovery, playing on your favorite app or on my website at jodiestevens.org. It's JodieStevens, jodiestevens.org. There you can check out my podcast, blog, recovery coaching info, speaking, and more. Check it out.